I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. We have got a great episode for you today. I got to sit down with Catherine Williams and we have a wonderful chat. We talk dance routines to Duran Duran records. We talk rapping to the Sugar Cubes on empty dance floors. And that's without any of Catherine's song choices. It's an absolute treat of a podcast, this. Before we get on with the episode, just like to say a few thank yous to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. And a big thank you to 76 for producing this podcast. If this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then once you've listened to my chat with Kath, please go and have a rummage in the archives, because you'll have access to about 170 episodes with some of your favourite musicians, actors, comedians, producers, DJs. Go and have a little look, and I'm sure you'll find something that will tickle your fancy. And if that's not enough, then I also have a Patreon page, so you can go over there. I put up 4 weekly radio shows over there, as well as video episodes and Patreon special episodes. So there's loads of content goes up each week over there. And also by signing up to the Patreon, you're also helping support this podcast. So any support given over there is much appreciated. Aside from that, if you can subscribe, that's really good as well. So just subscribe to the podcast, then you don't have to worry about missing any episodes. They'll just pop up on your listening device every week. Right, I've waffled on enough now, so I'm going to get on with today's episode. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track with the wonderful Catherine Williams.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we're recording. Sitting opposite me via the means of Zoom today, I'm thrilled to say I'm joined by Catherine Williams. Hello.
Hello, nice to see you.
We've not met before, and you've been kind enough to respond to my request online to come on and chat music, so I really appreciate that. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
So before we get on with talking records, Kav, can you tell me, because I guess there's this misconception that when lockdown starts, anybody that's in the creative arts like just makes the lockdown album, or just throws themselves into kind of creating. Was that the case for you?
Absolutely not. No. Absolutely 100% not. I mean, so I was, when it started happening, all I saw was people in music who I knew doing live concerts online and talking about writing songs about the situation. And I felt completely helpless to that. I felt like I was in the middle of the storm and there was no way I could have any perspective. And I also felt really useless. You know, I wasn't a nurse or a carer or a cleaner, or, and I think that really impacted on me. I was like, well, I just blooming put words to music and then sing them, like, what use am I? And it was about 3 or 4 weeks in, and I was thinking, I just haven't, I kept getting asked to be on online shows and this and that, and I just kept saying no, I can't do it. And then
why was that?
Just because I just, something had switched off in me where I felt like I didn't have anything to give and I just couldn't do it. And I'd never had that before in all of my career. I don't know what it was. I think it was the sort of shock of like what we were going through. Yeah. And I felt like I had nothing to say. And it just seemed a bit glib to get online and sing a few songs in the atmosphere. And not, that's not anything against the people who did that. I was admiring of them. So the way I sort of broke that eventually was my mum and dad are a really big like Dr. Hook fans. And so I went online and I learnt their favourite song, like Sylvia's Mother, and I did a FaceTime just to them as a surprise, because they're older, they're in lockdown, they're in Liverpool. And I said, I'm doing one concert this month and it's for you two and it's this song.
Oh, I love
and they
it.
Didn't, yeah. And so and my dad was like waving his hands in the air and singing along, and my mum was crying, and like I got through the song and it just felt like such a connection. And I thought, oh right, that's what, it's not about me. And then I realized that all of the stuff was just not about me thinking about me, it's about connecting. And then since then I've been able to do concerts and co-writes and things like that, because the creative thing came back. I sort of got over myself, really.
So weird, isn't it? It's like, it really is, you know, I think when I've asked this question to, you know, most of my guests, and it's like, did you throw yourself straight into writing? Everyone was like, no. They all had a very similar kind of knee-jerk reaction of like, oh my God, like, what? You know, not just creatives, I guess everybody just had that knee-jerk reaction to all of a sudden we was told we wasn't allowed to leave our homes, which is unprecedented, yeah. Wasn't it? No one could ever have imagined, you know, this was going to happen. And I think, you know, what that did definitely for a lot of people, certainly myself, it was just, I missed that connection with people and just being able to, you know, when you see someone, shake their hand or give them a cuddle, and it's like, you've been starved of that. And
I know. Well, cuddling is like my only superpower. I've been told that, like, I give the best hugs. And, like, so for the last 6 months, I feel like someone's given me kryptonite and I can't, you know. And when I see people, I'm like, oh, they don't know how great I am at hugging. So that's been a struggle daily.
Marvel and DC need to get on the phone, Kath. I'll tell you, that's the ultimate superhero there. Prolific cuddling.
Well, right, I'm just let's built talk for it. Yeah.
Kath, what's the song with the greatest ever intro?
Well, I'm sure there's more, but, you know, when you get asked these questions on interviews, you just have to kind of go with the thing that flashes into your brain first. And I really think Roscoe by Midlake is just one of the best intros that gets me into any album. And it was my go-to driving record when I was driving myself around on a support for Scott Matthews. And it was just me and Midlake. And I'd get in the car at the end of the gig and know that I had a 6-hour night drive ahead of me, and I'd stick Roscoe on, and just like the intro with like the guitar and then the drums driving in, and it would just get me onto the motorway. And I love that album and I love that band, and I think it's perfect. It was introduced to me by Ben Trigg, who did all the string arrangements on Crown Electric, and yeah, so I have him to thank.
Kath, have you... I've been trying to get this question right ever since I've started this podcast. Have you... and I've never got it right.
I'm nervous now.
How have you found your approach to intros and songwriting, you know, as changed as your career's matured? Have you... And obviously what's also changed is the way that people listen to music.
Yeah.
You know, it's far more choice now, and obviously whenever you're on a streaming platform there's a constant array of, yeah, you might like this, these distractions, which, You know, it's a, you know, the consensus of opinion when I've asked this question previously, it's both good and bad. You know, we all adore the days of going to get the piece of vinyl and being able to cherish it, but obviously you could only afford one bit a week and et cetera. But as the way that people sort of like ingest their music now, has that affected any way that you've sort of changed the way that you write in any way over the years?
Yes and no is the.
Do you get what I mean with the question? I completely.
It made absolute sense to me. And if I could hug you right now.
Oh wow!
No. No, because I over the years I've become a songwriter for other artists as well, That's a really different sort of mentality for writing songs. And I sort of equate it to like doing my own stuff is like a fine artist where I just work out creatively what I'm doing. And when I'm doing songs for other people, it's more like a graphic artist where you're writing to a brief. And the more I write with like pop artists and producers and things like that, the thing I get back in those sessions all the time is... No, this intro needs to be shorter because of Spotify. This intro, you know, you have to get them in the first 5 seconds. Why haven't we started the chorus? And so there is like fundamental like structure restrictions when you're writing songs that people want to, they want to grab that sort of streaming audience right away. So that's the yes answer. And the no answer is I sort of just poodle along and don't give a fuck about that. So the song, my songs, when I write them, they sort of, they're the boss and not me. And I don't like to have any of that business head on. So sometimes... you know, I mean, I suppose it does feed in from the other stuff that I do, and I think I've got more sort of succinct and honed and like sort of condensed songs so that they have like a sort of more of a hook. But that hasn't, I haven't got the cynical side of that when I'm writing.
I don't think anyone's answered that question as perfectly as you now. Wonderful.
Oh, stop it. You know that you're getting a hug.
Yeah, I just think it's really interesting that you know, writing, and I guess it is the more pop edge of the market that question, I guess, is more directed at, because there, the pop market is the thing that it's now become this absolute art form to create this perfect pop record, and so many of them seem to start with the chorus now, And as you say, like, shorten the intro. So, yeah, well, thank you loads for answering that, Kath, because I think you've probably covered all spectrums that I was trying to get the answer from there. Perfect. Track two. First song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you?
Oh, yeah, I wrote my notes down from when we had an email, because I've got such a flighty brain. But yeah, so when I was 10, I went to a tabletop sale and I bought Teaser and the Firecat by Cat Stevens. You know, it's sort of like got that sort of 70s cover on the front of like a boy painted and a cat. And on the back, it's like a really big close-up of a Cat Stevens with a beard. And so my sister's 2 years older, and when she had like Duran Duran and all like that 80s stuff on the wall, I had a bearded Cat Stevens that I used to kiss next to the bed. And I think my mum and dad were really worried about me, because like the only things I had on my wall was Daley Thompson, Cat Stevens, and who was the guy from the A-Team that was crazy and used
Murdoch.
To talk with... Yeah, Murdoch. So yeah, it is quite hilarious. But then when they met my husband, it all made sense. So anyway...
Is your husband like a mad decathlete with a beard?
Yeah. Yes, he is. And so I just like put him at the side of my bed and kiss him every night. So... Back to the music. So Cat Stevens, yeah. I put the record on because I used to listen to my gran's records and my mum and dad's records growing up. And I'd bought this myself and I didn't know what it was or what it was like. And I put it on. I think the first track was The Wind. It's definitely the first one I listened to. And it was so gentle and peaceful and his voice was so tender. And I'd never really heard that before in music. I mean, it was the 80s when I was growing up, so it was quite all, you know, coked up and like lots of horns and lots of synths and stuff. And I was like, what is this magical world? And I remember the tears in my eyes when I was listening to it on my dad's headphones.
What was the emotion? So,
it was kind of love because it was just so... It was so tender and quiet and gentle and still. And I just felt like it just completely entered me. And I was in this song. And I remember it really vividly.
And would this have been back in Liverpool?
Yeah, this would have been in Liverpool. I was brought up in sort of Chilwell, Walton Way.
You touched on something else then. You said you was... sort of exposed to like your gran's records and stuff like that. What sort of music was you know being played, you know, indoors growing up?
Well, so my dad was like a big folky and sort of songwriter, so there was like lots of Dylan, and he's a massive Paul Simon fan, so I grew up with all of that sort of music. And my mum liked Janis Joplin and Dr. Hook, and so she was a bit rockier. And then my gran's music, she had Nina Simone and Joan Baez, and then she had like Lonnie Donegan and Val Dunican and like sort of weird stuff as well. And like she had a really weird Eartha Kitt album that was singing Bob Dylan songs, but. She gave me her Tees Maid and her like dance set record player, and I had the smallest room in the house, but I felt like I was living in my own flat because I had a dance set record player and I was independent.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, I'm loving the fact you had a dance set, but can we just talk about a Tees Maid for a moment, please? Because my nan had a Tees Maid, and like whenever I'd get to stay at my nan's. The thought that I was going to wake up in the morning and there'd be a little clock with a mug next to it that'd make me a cup of tea. I mean, it was like staring at the future, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Well, it's the best sort of future where it's like, I love retro future, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like what people in the 40s and 50s thought the future would be.
Yeah.
And it's kind of really sweet and innocent, yeah.
I mean... I've not seen a Tees Maid since I was probably a little'un. One of the things in retrospect...
I didn't expect that I would be sat talking to you about Tees Maids. It's really great.
What? Would the milk not have gone off by the morning?
Yes, probably. Well, I think that you had to go down and get your jug of milk.
System's flawed.
Yeah,
flawed.
It is.
That's not
it
what
is.
You want. You want to wake up and yeah. You want the cup of tea there. And it's just, I thought, oh, I mean, I could use powdered milk. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe that's why they've never, you know, you don't really see them anymore.
Yeah. 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 And people like think, well, just there's a kettle downstairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can get take up. A cup of tea back to bed.
Oh, brilliant. For track three, Kath, the song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
Right, so the only two things that I could think of was Salt and Pepper and Duran Duran. And The Reflex by Duran Duran, my sister bought that, and we decided that we were going to, like, do a robotics dance routine to it. And so every night after school, we would, like, practice. And it was fucking dreadful. Every time. Like, even now I'm thinking about... So the beginning was pushing the cap to one side, flex. So Yeah, but I mean, it sounded so modern at the time. And then Salt and Pepper, it was all about the dances. I guess that's what kids do now with TikTok, isn't it? Mm. But like, I remember it was all about how you dance to certain songs.
Yeah. From a tease made to TikTok in a minute. Check us out. Still down with the kids.
Ragamuffin. Yeah.
I did hear on the radio the other day that there's some big hip-hop auction. I don't know what it's to raise money for, but I heard Sean Keaveney getting very excited about it on Six Music. And on one of the most prestigious item on there are the two jackets worn by Salt and Pepper in the Push It video.
Oh, yeah. I have them. I've got them both. I just put a big bid in. No. Can you imagine going to like a sort of melancholic folky gig and I'm dressed up as Salt and Pepper?
Do it.
doing robotics to a Leonard Cohen song.
Oh, wonderful. I mean, Push It is an incredible record, though.
Like, yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. And I remember seeing that. We're very similar in age, Gav, and so we was both at school when that record dropped, and it was like all the girls are doing the dance in the playground.
Yeah, all of that.
There we go. There we go. I mean, it was slightly better than flex.
Well, you know the Roger Rabbit sort of like dance where you used to do that and your feet would go behind each other?
Yeah.
I was doing that for my sister and she still talks to me and cries laughing at the fact that I was like showing her how good I was at it. And I managed to get my big toenail stuck into my heel and it broke off and there was like blood.
That's commitment.
I know. She says, I remember the time you stabbed yourself with your foot. So, yeah, so I wasn't particularly the best dancer at it.
Well, how did you find school, Kath?
Good and bad. I went to a sort of quite a rough comp that joined forces with another comp that had closed down. And it was a bit of a culture shock, really, because I was a bit like, not well. They thought I was posh. I mean, would you believe it? But like comparatively, like you know, I was quite shy and quiet, and I was into drawing and books. I was just like kind of geeky and stuff. And when I got there, I was asked out for fights by people for no reason. You know, they meet you at the gates for a fight. And I was like, oh, God. So I used to find it really hard and I didn't feel like I ever really fitted in. I remember one of the... I know we're not doing this for the tracks, but there's a Janis Joplin song called Cry Baby. And I used to listen to that on these big brown headphones with a coil. And I used to listen to her sing that every morning to give me the, like, confidence to walk to school. And I felt like she was someone that I could relate to because, like, she didn't fit in, you know. She wasn't, like, one of the pretty... She wasn't, you know what I mean? She wasn't, like... Yeah, I just felt like... I felt like an outsider. And it's funny because my mum and dad said that I did have friends and I was well liked, but it didn't feel like that. Yeah, but that was kind of good because it just meant that I just got really into my own head and I've never left.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you was at school?
Well, I always wrote stuff down and did songs secretly. But I didn't think I wanted to be that. I wanted to be an artist. It was the time of like, you know, Ghost with Demi Moore in like, and I was like, I'm going to be like a ceramicist and painter and I'm going to live on my own and my bed is going to be here and my canvas is over there and it's so 80s and I'm going to wear dungarees. So that was the dream. And then I did work experience because I quite wanted to be a physiotherapist. And then I dislocated my elbow and had 20 months of intense physiotherapy, and that sort of put me off.
So, when did you say you was writing things down and songs and stuff? Was you playing as well then?
Yeah, so we had a piano at home. I wasn't really great on it. We had a few lessons, but I wasn't like, you know. And then when I was 16, my mum bought a guitar for me and my sister, and I just snaffled it. And when I went to university, I took that away, and I just used to play guitar and write songs secretly all the time. And it wasn't until I was living in a shared house in Fenham in Newcastle, and a load of my flatmates heard me singing through the walls, and they booked me onto on a songwriter's night, you know, like where you do like three songs.
Yeah.
And they told me that they'd booked me on and that I had to do it. And so I didn't sleep all that night, and I don't know why, I just didn't do it, but I did. And then I got asked to do the next week, and on the next week there was someone there from the NME, and they wrote about me, and then that's how it all started.
Wow. Second gig.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So from being, you know, as you said, feeling like a bit of an outsider at school and getting kind of, you know, lost in your own head, to then walk out on stage, was you confident in what you could do?
I've talked about this quite a lot, because, and I still find myself a massive puzzle, because I had stage fright, I had agoraphobia, stage fright, and when I first started out with like Little Black, Dog Leap Stairs, and then the sort of Mercury Little Black Numbers, I was sitting down on stage because I would black out with nerves, and I would have to go off stage and come back on, and I would be so ill before every single gig. I was, and in the studio when we recorded both of those albums, I couldn't have anyone in the control room or anyone in the studio because I was too embarrassed to sing those takes in front of anyone.
Wow.
I mean, it was crazy. And it's like, why did I put myself through all of that? And I know that it wasn't for show, and it was, I mean, it's taken years and years to get to a point where now I really love live music. Yay, just in time for lockdown.
are you driven, Kath?
I think I am, yeah. But it's because I must have had ambition and drive to keep pushing myself through all of those years of fear,
yeah.
and complete stage fright, and it was that complete imposter syndrome of, I was so scared of the audience. I was so scared of someone standing up in the audience and saying, "You're not qualified to do this," you know, why, you know, or they would laugh at me or something. It was like really stupid paranoia. And then I can tell, is it okay to tell you how that changed?
Of course.
I feel like I'm just going off on one.
No, this is what the songs are, just the anchor. The rest of the stories is what I'm interested in.
Yeah, so I was on tour supporting what's his name? He sang Trouble. What's his name? You know. It's on the tip of my tongue. Ray LaMontagne.
Right, LaMontagne, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, so I was supporting him, and I was pregnant with my first son, Louis. And I went on stage and I was like, got the nerves on here. And, I mean, there were big, big shows. They were like, you know, Shepherd's Bush Empire, four nights in a row and stuff. He was really big. And the nerves were just not there. And I think it was because I was pregnant and it wasn't all about me. And, you know, I had bigger things to think about, like, how the fuck was I going to get a human head out my arse? Or... But yeah, it just sort of, I realised that people were on my side and that they wanted the best. They wanted a good show.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that it was me against them. And yes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So since then, touch wood, things have just got better for that side of it.
Oh, that's wonderful.
The Killatrix Future Weapons EP is out now. Seven tracks. Listen on all the major streaming platforms or find out where to buy in the show notes. It's badass. Like me, the sexy robot lady. Ooh yeah, baby. Right there. That's good.
What was the first record you bought, Kath?
Well, with Teaser and the Firecat was the first one I bought. But in a shop, I think it was Do They Know It's Christmas?
Okay.
Just, it just happened to be that time when everyone bought that to felt like they were changing the world.
The first one?
Know? Yeah.
Not the second one with Big Fun and Sonia.
No, not the second one.
One of my favourite videos to watch that.
Oh, do you know what? I've got a bit of time after this. I might I might have a little look. Mind you, I looked like Sonia then. I had massive Liverpool perm.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
How important were record shops for you growing up? And how important are independent record shops to you now?
Well, important. So my sister was like my anchor, really. And we had, it was the day of CDs. So we were sort of crossed between vinyl and CDs. And so we would go to Oxfam on Allerton Road together to get our vinyl, and then we would go and we'd go to Quiggins in Liverpool, and I would just adore flicking through vinyl in Quiggins, like thinking I'm an independent woman. And I've still got loads of albums that I bought when I was like 17, like loads of early Joni Mitchell and Neil Young, and I just went through all of that. But then also me and my sister would go to, there was like a sort of weird CD shop on Egbeth Road near Rose Lane, and they would have all of the promos and the stuff that had been given to like you know, like promos for
DJs,
radio.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and often they'd be like white label stuff, and we'd just go and like do potluck and stuff and find things that way.
Could you ever find a gem in now?
Well, yeah. The Orb, Little Fluffy Clouds, I got. There was also like Psychedelic Furs. Like, I've still got it. Another Girl, Another Planet. And like, I just, it was really nice because that was my record shopping in that way for me, just meant that I had this massive rainbow of eclectic stuff, you know, like Led Zeppelin and like Joni Mitchell, opposite ends, and then punk, and then what was going on in the charts didn't really interest me at all, so I didn't keep up with the current stuff. So yeah.
I was at a boot sale once, and there was just a wallpaper paste table with a box of like white labels on it. And I didn't recognise anything on there, and I'm a, you know, a bit of a music nerd, so I generally would sort of pick a few names out. But and I just saw this name, and I just thought, The Prayer Boat, that sounds lovely. And I bought this album by this band called The Prayer Boat. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, Kath.
No.
They're an Irish band. And to this day, it's one of my favourite ever albums, and I bought it completely blind, just thinking, I don't know what this is going to be like, and it's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful, and hardly anyone's ever heard of them, but someone should have signed up that white label and made them happen, because it was glorious. But to finish off on that question, so how are you finding how much sort of importance do you put on the independent record shops now?
Well, it's actually massive for me. I mean, the last thing I did before lockdown was I did a sort of a tour of in-stores, independent in-stores, because I had the box set out with the record label, and they were working individually with loads and loads of independent record stores, where we would get like a load of people down, I would do a live show, then sign the stuff, so that, you know, it was just sort of promoting it and getting that on socials and lots of things like that. And meeting them individually, it's amazing. I mean, my husband has a bakery up in Newcastle, and it's an independent shop. And I just really value money going into the pockets of local... Oh, it's falling. Sorry, it's my microphone falling towards me. It's trying to hug me, but you can't. It's lockdown microphone. So I just really value that, and that human thing. I think Spotify has done sort of lots for making it available to... It's like the white label box, isn't it, where you can just test loads of stuff out. But... the connections and how those independents have had to change and shift and have books as well as records and have a coffee shop and make it a sort of place that people can go to. Because I think people forget that, like, a lot of the music scene is, like, live music and music shops are such a big place for... people who live alone or who find those connections through music and don't always have a relationship with someone, and they need to have these places that they can go to and feel like they're part of the world. You know, loads of people who come to my gigs come on their own, and I just think it's like a... That's sort of what I'm sad about with record shops that are not being able to keep open at this time, and live shows. There's this massive, like, hidden group of people who did have somewhere to go and now don't, because they wouldn't necessarily go to the pub on their own, and they wouldn't necessarily go to a restaurant on their own, or they'd go to a shop but they couldn't hang around and actually talk and have maybe their one conversation in the day. So I suppose that's what's important about it.
Well, I guess while we're talking about going out, then we can talk about track five, Kaff, which is the song that soundtracked your years clubbing.
So, when I hit 40, I was like, oh, thank fuck, I've been 40 since I was 16. but I had to play the game of life and do all, you know. I had a great time as a student, and I had a great time in Liverpool clubbing, and I had brilliant friends. But I would be going to, like, you know, Cream or whatever, and there'd be, like, raving music, and I'd get some of it, but really what I was craving was Cat Stevens, or, you know. So then when the clubbing would finish and we'd walk back all the way home, 7 miles home, because we couldn't afford a taxi, we'd go to a friend's house and we'd, like, stick on something like Little Fluffy Clouds by The Orb, or that sort of come down music, and then that would always be my, like, favourite bit of the night. I know, I'm such a sad bastard.
Do you know what? I reckon I've probably interviewed about 200 people on this podcast, and most of them, I'd say 90% of them are musicians, and pretty much all of them have said, yeah, weren't really into clubbing. Like, and, you know, and kind of, you know, I would then sort of go, well, by clubbing, I mean, it could be like your local indie night, you know, and things like that, which people would go to.
Well, I'd like the indie nights, so that's a bit different, yeah. Mm. When you said clubbing, I was like, oh, I did do that, but, yeah.
So was there lots of indie nights in Liverpool then?
Yeah, there was Macmillan's just off Bold Street, and there was the Cavern. I used to go to the Cavern, really, like, when I was young, going out. My sister's 2 years older than me, so I'd sneak in with her most of the time. And there was one song I always used to ask for, the Sugar Cubes hit. You know that song?
Of course.
This wasn't supposed to happen. And I was like, I'd always go to the DJ and ask for that song and dance to that. And now the mad thing is that I've, for the last, 10 years, I've been on one little
Indian,
or indie,
yeah,
of course. So it's they've changed their name to One Little Indie, you know.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, with all the Black Lives Matter things and stuff. I think it's a good decision. But, yeah, so that's kind of mad. So for the last 10 years, I've kind of been on Bjork's label.
Have you met her?
No, I haven't, no. But, Derek, who runs the label, I stay with them quite a lot. And in his house, it's got all of the... So when you go to the offices or his house, there's, like, all the stuff. So, like, you know, the big feet and outfits and all the pictures, and it's really good.
Cool. There'd be a museum somewhere, wouldn't there? You could have a big old museum of some of her artifacts, some of her videos and her outfits that she's worn on stage. God.
She's amazing.
A few crackers there. But I remember when I first saw Hit on the chart show, and she had the kind of cones on her head, and I remember just thinking, because I'd heard the name The Sugar Cubes before. I hadn't heard, like, the stuff like Birthday that had come out before that. But Hit, I remember thinking, was brilliant. And then the guy would do that kind of odd, quirky kind of rap thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew all of it, and I always asked for it early on in the night before people were dancing, because there was, like, arches in the Cavern, and then either side there was, like, tables, and so it would, about 9 o'clock on a Saturday, it would only be me dancing to the Sugar Cubes hit.
Doing the full rap as well.
Yeah, everything, yeah, and probably the accent, and people were probably like, who is that?
But, yeah. Oh, wonderful. For track six, I'm going to ask you the favourite song from an artist from your home county, please, Kath.
Okay, well, I'm from Liverpool, even though I live in Newcastle, and I live between Chilwell and Woolton, And so the nearest sort of places is Menlove Avenue and Penny Lane and where Strawberry Fields is. So my local artists were the Beatles. And yeah, so I kind of thought I'd choose Eleanor Rigby just because, one, it's a song that we used to sing at school, and when I was little we'd sing Yellow Submarine and different songs like that, and it took me years before I realised that they weren't hymns as well. So we'd sing, like, you know, All Things Bright and Beautiful, and then we'd sing Yellow Submarine, and I just thought these were all church songs. And then people were like, no, there's a band called the Beatles. And I just love that it's so ingrained in the culture of Liverpool and such a part of it that, and I love Eleanor Rigby because when you think of the Beatles, or you think, you know, like, it's such a sort of inclusive thing, and it seems so mainstream, and then you hear a song like that with, like, the cellos and the strings and all the harmonies banked up, and it's like some sort of Baroque thing, and it's talking about like an old lady that dies on her own and all the lonely people in the world. And I just think that that sort of really, people forget that the Beatles just were so free and open in their choice of what they were going to write songs about.
Yeah.
It wasn't just all about young love, and it wasn't all about it sounding cool and 60s and 70s. And yeah, so I choose that.
A few people have spoke about Eleanor Rigby for other questions on this in the past, and it's so interesting. You said that you studied that at school. That was it. When I done music at school, the first song that we had to kind of study was Eleanor Rigby.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it really was.
And what were you told to learn?
Well, I think it was like the lyrics, really. I think it was the first sort of song that I'd ever really sort of paid attention. It was almost sort of storyboarded. You know, you can shut your eyes and see it, can't you?
Yeah, like a film.
Like, it probably sounds like a crazy question, but like, when you write your song, can you see it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, that's a... So I'm trained as an artist, but, like, not really any formal lessons in music or writing, really. But when I make a song, it's very sort of sensual, in that I'm in a sort of film, like, and I can see what I'm trying to do, and it's not necessarily like a narrative film of like a story and a storyboard, but I'm like in a place, and like, this is how it feels, and I know that if the chorus is going in the right place, because it will fit the framework of the picture in my head.
I mean, you answered that perfectly there.
Oh God, don't say that. I'm just shit at interviews. I always feel like someone asks me about Bob Dylan and I end up talking about a yellow car. I just go off on tangents.
Right, for your last track, Kaf, a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
Well, I'm a massive... two artists who I love, and I know that Gillian Welch is much more well-known, but not well-known enough. I think she is a genius. And I also think Devon Spruill is a genius. And I'm massive, massive fans of both of them. Devon Spruill's latest album, The Gold String, it's a devious little record, because you think, it's okay. And then with Listen and Listen, it unfolds, and it's just so beautiful and unique. And like, I get really sick of, like, female singer-song... I am female singer-songwriter. But I get really sick of that sort of, like, simplicity, or, like trying to be sexy, or, like... I don't know, I just... sometimes I just want someone to be themselves and the artist that can say things that I'd not thought of before, and both of them do that for me. They tick the boxes lyrically and they push themselves melodically, and both of them have they both sing and you believe it. So that's all I ever want. I don't need people to do hundreds of notes or be the best singers in the world or be the best guitarists in the world. I just want to believe what they're singing and for it to move me. That's all.
What would the track by Gillian be?
Well, it would be Time the Revelator for me, just because I gave birth to that song through a haze of gas and air. but the song itself has become a revelation. And as I've got older, I've gone back to that song over and over again and just thought, my God, it's prophetic. It's amazing. It's just so... I'm really impatient, and that song makes me less impatient, and she makes you wait for how it unfolds. And, I feel like I learn every time I listen to that record.
Well, Kath, I put together a Spotify playlist to accompany this podcast of all the records that we've spoke about, so people can go and explore all your choices and some other bits and bobs. I'll throw the Sugar Cubes in there as well, I think, and everybody can learn the rap then.
I'll put Devon Spruill in, because, like, she's less well-known than Gillian, and I want to support her.
I'll throw them all in there, Kath. As we find ourselves... hopefully on the way out of lockdown, what are you looking forward to most and what have you got coming up?
Well, yesterday I just approved the last edit of my novel, my first novel that's coming out next year.
Oh, wow.
I know, it's been 4 years of secretly writing it. I didn't want to tell people that I was writing a book in case I couldn't do it, and I didn't know if I could do it because I'd never done it before.
Is that imposter syndrome thing again?
Uh-huh. And I just got the go-ahead from the label for an album I'm doing with Michelle Stoddart from The Magic Numbers.
Oh, wow.
It's a kind of like... It's sort of like a guilty pleasures kind of bangles. We're calling our genre clit rock instead of cock rock.
Love it.
But yeah, she's like one of my best friends, and we writing and singing together, and they're joyous songs. And then I'm doing a Christmas album with Carol Ann Duffy, who used to be the poet laureate.
Yeah. So
I'm just doing some interesting things at the moment and writing with artists all over the world and making sure I try and get the dinner on and the hoovering done.
So if people want to kind of keep up to speed on what's happening, where's the best place?
So I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I've got a website with the label, and they can join a mailing list, and I'm on Patreon as well, which is my, like, little secret club. I've got about 40 people, and I just put songs on that no one else can hear and send letters to people, and then they send me their addresses and I make paintings and send them in the post.
Oh, wonderful. And that's patreon.com/...
Catherine Williams.
Perfect. Well, yeah. I'll add them links to the bio of this podcast so people can go and explore all of them things. Kath, I've had an absolutely lovely time talking to you about records.
Me too. It's been really nice to meet you. I'll meet you next week, same time.
Yeah, let's do it. And as soon as this is over and done with this lockdown, I'm coming to Newcastle for a cuddle, all right?
Definitely. Thanks, I'll put my best jumper.
There you go. Catherine Williams, ladies and gentlemen. That was an absolute delight. Kath was so much fun, and as mentioned, go and have a look in the bio to get some links to go and check out what Kath's up to. And as mentioned at the beginning as well, if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, now you're done listening to this, then go and have a look at some other episodes, because there's a bundle, 170-odd episodes with... Oh, who've you got? Let's have a little think. If you like listening to actors, you can hear me talking to Maxine Peake, Lolly Adefope, Amanda Abington. Musicians, you can hear me talking to bands as diverse as Deftones, to James Lavelle, to the Kaiser Chiefs, to Chuck D from Public Enemy. So there's all manner of chats to be had. So go and have a rummage. And you can find out about everything at www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Thanks ever so much for listening. Please subscribe, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year, and they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands, alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast, and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off The Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off The Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.